listening to the greatest outdoor radio show in the state, Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish, sitting alongside Danielle Fairman. Hey, Danielle.
What's up, Turkey Man?
Turkey.
I did not expect that.
That
I
sounded
like
pretty
it.
Good, didn't it?
It did. It was a good visual. Oh, see, the purring. The purring is what gets me with a diaphragm. I cannot do that. It just tickles so much. I can't do it.
You got to cheat and do it on a slate.
Yeah. Much better with a slate. Much better with a slate.
No, I think that sounds pretty good if you ask me.
Oh, yeah. I do. What kind of call are you using?
That's a jargon call, of
jargon
course.
Jargon call.
What else would you expect? Hey, you're catching us on your civic media stations throughout Wisconsin, 13 stations, all the major markets. Saturdays at 11 o'clock, tune in to civic media for all your news, weather, sports, local sports, national sports, and the greatest outdoor radio show Raised in Wisco. I mean, look, for me, springtime is anew for Wisconsin. The blossoms are out. The asparagus is growing in the ditches. The morels are growing next to the dead elms. And turkey season is in full swing. Danielle, your tag starts tomorrow.
It does. I'm very excited about it. I have actually gotten out and got a couple of morels already, so I'm hoping to get a few more. I haven't found any asparagus yet. But
Keep searching until morel improves.
Oh my goodness. There it is.
It didn't take long to bust out the dad jokes.
Your dad joke happened right away,
that?
But I'm very excited.
Yeah. Morel.
But I am very pumped for tomorrow. My turkey season starts. And because of the wonderful weather today, I'm a dirt worker. So I have off tomorrow.
What? Oh, because it's all mushy outside?
All mushy, all muddy. We cannot do the things we need to do. So I will be out in the woods tomorrow. I'm very excited.
That is very exciting. I have a 10 a.m. call tomorrow. You asked. So I'm trying to think if we could go hunting tomorrow. I have a 10 a.m. conference call in Fort Atkinson. So there's a chance we could hunt in the morning.
Sounds fantastic. Can't you have the conference call
in the ground blind? No, that will not work.
No.
Especially because it's the A-Team conference call. And today we had the A-Team outdoor angling adventure where we take folks with diverse abilities out into the great outdoors, the A-Team Adventure Series. And Danielle, I'm excited to say, is going to be emceeing the golf outing this year.
Again. Oh, yeah. Last year was quite nervous.
Well, you'll be fine. Don't sweat it. They're just happy to have you, Danielle.
They're wonderful people. Absolutely wonderful people.
The radio celebrity that you are. Hey, Anya's taking a break this week.
I know.
Good for her. And old school friend Calvin is on the mic. Calvin, what's going on, buddy?
It has been a long time.
Just so everyone knows, Calvin was the original producer of Raised in Wisco back when it was called Raised in the Shaw, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I cannot believe we've been doing the show this long already. It's the fastest growing, most awesome show. I am told that Chad Belding, star of The Foul Life on the Outdoor Channel, that Ted Nugent and Meat Eater, Stephen Ranella, are regular listeners to the show.
Oh, no freaking way.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Oh, come on.
Well, I mean, they could be.
Ted was on our show, so why wouldn't he be?
Ted Nugent was on our show, and he is like the godfather of the woods. Everybody knows that. He hunted with the world famous Fred Bear. I had an awesome turkey season, time period A. It's so weird because the turkey season in Wisconsin, 6 weeks. And it seems like we're only finishing up week three.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like forever ago it started. And now I have another tag starting in zone one, the Foul Life crew, Chad Belding, Tom Rasheen. They're coming to Wisconsin. We're going to be out in zone one out near Spring Green, Wisconsin. And we're going to be hunting them out there. That's a whole different world out there to hunt turkeys because it's got all the coulees and the little mountains. I mean,
what are you
supposed to call those? And they're not mountains per se. I'm gonna bring Josh in early. Josh Parent from Whitetail Design Build, who is going to be talking. We're talking deer seed. We're going to talk about how to create the best habitat for whitetails. But before we get to that, I want to bring Josh in. What do you think they're called? Those
are you talking
foothills?
Like in southwestern Wisconsin,
yes.
The rock faces?
The rock faces.
We always call them rock outcroppings.
Outcroppings.
Yep.
I know the word coulee. Mm-hmm. Coulee is like, isn't a coulee like a divot where the glaciers left a divot between the little mounds? I think that's what a coulee is, and that's what they call them in La Crosse. But it's a whole different kind of turkey hunting.
It is.
Because first of all, the turkeys can't see your decoys from a long distance away because there's little hills, peaks, and valleys everywhere. And even the farm fields have got dips in them. So it makes it a lot trickier to hunt. And I think calling becomes more important. But when you get to this part of the season, this is the tough part of the season. You've got the real active birds at the front end, and then they become more active again in weeks 5 and 6 because most of the hens have been bred, and then the toms are out searching for the leftover ladies. Those subdominant toms are out there. The main toms are tired, and they're not as active, and they're not as ready to get in fights. But this middle period can be real tricky. You don't know what tact to take. Do you take the tact of going after them with an aggressive tom decoy, or do you back off to the Jake decoy? And I think subtle calling makes a difference, too. But you, Josh, you've got your tag coming up.
Next week.
Yep. Danielle, your tag starts tomorrow.
Tomorrow. I'm very excited.
What is your plan?
My plan is to go out in the public land down by the Kettle Moraine. I've been watching quite a few toms strut out there for weeks now, and they have not vanished. They have not steered away, so it's kind of perfect. But the public land is probably a good 2 football field lengths away, so I'm hoping maybe they'll come out by me.
You mean from what, two feet where they're
from the property line, from the private land that I always see them on?
Oh, they're on. You're seeing them on
private land. Yes, correct. I'm seeing them on private land.
So you're counting on calling them over.
I am. I'm hoping. Okay. Well, hopefully we can do the thing that we did when you called them from however yards away. That was...
I haven't decided if I want to get up tomorrow morning real, real early and be tired all day. Maybe I'll take you to one of my spots that I've been watching for a while. We'll see. Here's the biggest problem. I mean, I'm so obsessed with turkey hunting. I'm out there the night before putting them to bed, watching where they roost. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that we can't because we're doing the radio show. So I won't have any sense as to where they are going to bed tonight, so it'll make it a little tougher. I mean, it's a little more guessing, but I think when it comes to turkey hunting, my guessing is probably 90% better than the average person hitting the turkey field, because I'm guessing on fields that I've literally watched them for the past 5 months.
Mm-hmm. Last weekend, Josh and I went up north to his parents' place in Kendall.
Okay.
And
who's Josh?
Who's Josh?
Who's Josh? Who is this Josh?
Not this Josh.
Not the Josh in the studio. Josh's wife
just to clarify.
Would not be happy with you being the Josh in the story. Josh's wife would have a little issue if this was the Josh you went up north
with. Oh, my goodness.
I was in the UP last week.
Kelvin, what the hell's going on in here? What are we getting into? What is this, Kardashian radio?
My boyfriend.
Whoa! Hold on! We're calling him a boyfriend already?
You called him a boyfriend 2 weeks ago on live radio.
Okay.
You introduced the world.
So Josh is your new boyfriend. Oh,
yes.
That's precious, Danielle.
Okay, back to the story. Yes, not this Josh. My Josh. My Josh.
Well, now you're calling him your Josh? See, isn't that just, you know...
So his grandparents live up in Kendall.
Of you, your Josh. Just saying.
The wind was
blowing. Well, now who's Kendall?
No, up in Kendall.
Oh gosh, I thought there was a Kendall involved, and then someone else would be upset.
The turkeys were called Kendalls.
Okay.
But that was my first time hunting in like the, I'm gonna call them hollers, rockless, whatever.
Holler. I like holler. That. That's like hillbilly, so I like that.
Okay.
A holler.
Down in the hollers. And with the wind, trees were falling as we were hunting. Like the wind was so freaking strong, but we still found them down in the crevice. He had the perfect idea of where to go down where all the trees are. So it's the hills block all the wind. And he just hears them calling. And so he starts calling them back, hitting the tree, like they're fighting and everything. And then the hens, they see us. So we just stop, drop down, and then. It's not my season, so I have nothing. So I'm trying to help as much as I possibly can. And then the hens come over. They're having a great time. They're yelling, yiping.
Did you have decoys, or were you just calling?
We did have decoys, but they kept, like, The Tom decoy kept spinning and blowing like the wind was.
It didn't look natural.
It did not. The wind was, I swear it was a tornado. Like, it was just that bad. But the turkeys were still calling, so it was perfect. And so he calls the hens over. One is just yelping, just nonstop, just yelling at us. And then the other one's just silent as can be. But then you hear the tops. You hear the gobbles coming from over the hill. But over the little hill.
Isn't that the coolest?
Is the other private land. So the hens come over to us, but the toms just stay over there just gobbling away. You can just envision them just strutting back and forth.
Those toms never followed
they
those hens?
They never. The hens came probably about a good 50 yards towards us, but the toms never crest the little hill.
Were the hens, had the toms been where the hens were, would they have been in shooting range?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's 50 yards or so, 30, 40 yards.
Oh, yeah, the hens came well within 15. And then one just said, I'm good over here, and just started casually walking away. I'm like, no, come back. We need you here. We need to shoot a tom.
Were you trying to call then? I mean, because sometimes they get a little call sour at this stage of the, it's tough.
Once the hens got within like 40, he like stopped calling, but did a yelp every once in a while.
Sure.
Because he was just leaning against a tree. We were walking, because we were transferring to another spot. And as we were walking towards the next spot we wanted to go, that's when we heard them and they started cresting the hill, and that's when we stopped and just dropped. So we were not in perfect position to hide. So when we're trying to call, we're just trying to like look away just a little bit and like make it sound like it's coming from behind us a little bit so they don't directly look at us.
What, did he end up getting a turkey?
No.
Okay. I was going to tease it to the next break if he got a turkey, but he didn't get one. So we'll be right back on Raised in Wisco. We've got Josh Parent in the studio from Whitetail Design Build. He's going to be with us when we come back. Danielle, that's her. I'm Joel.
Hello.
This is Raised in Wisco. We'll be right back.
I only talk to God when I need a favor, and I only pray when I ain't got a prayer. So who the hell am I, who the hell am I to expect a savior? Oh, if I only talk to God when I need a favor, I need a favor.
We're talking turkey on the greatest outdoor radio show in the state of Wisconsin, Raised in Wisco.
Greatest, number one.
I'm Joel Clayfish.
I'm Danielle Ferriman.
Yes, and yes. Danielle, had one failed attempt so far.
Oh, we went out the next day, but nothing.
So, but you knew where they were hanging out.
We did. We knew where they were hanging out.
Did you get in early before daylight and set up and everything?
Sure did.
And then
it's a torrential downpour.
Ugh.
It was just a horrible weekend to go.
Okay.
It was a horrible weekend to go.
So I want to talk about this. The guys that I am in my group Snapchat with, who very clearly are just a group of idiots, because, I mean, there's like 15 of us. I'm by far the oldest, but they will argue about the stupidest thing over and over. And I want to get Josh. Josh Parent is with us. He's from Whitetail Design Build. We're going to get to how to set up your whitetail habitat, but he's a seasoned hunter as well. And I want all of your input. They got in a fight with each other, reaping, run and gunning versus setting up. Run and gunning, reaping, and setting up for turkeys. So reaping is where you see a turkey. That I think that's for people who just don't want to get out of bed. I'll be honest with you. I think that's for people who want to sleep in the morning. So they will drive around, find a turkey in a field, either on a field they have permission or get permission. Then they sneak out in the field behind a giant turkey fan and try to convince that tom to get close enough, drop the fan, and shoot it.
It looks like a rush, though. I would love to do that.
Oh, I've done it. I've hunted turkeys always. And I want to be very clear. I don't think there's an ethical issue with any of it. if you're given a tag, I think you should be able to kill a turkey anyway, by any means possible. I think I don't understand why there's a rule that your shotgun's got to be, you know, 18 inches long. That doesn't make sense to me. You should be able to kill one with a judge, a 45 or 10, in my opinion. I think you should be able to fill your tag with a rifle like they do in Florida. I don't have the same exact beliefs that the DNR does or that the laws of the state of Wisconsin. I want to be very clear. Follow the law of the state of Wisconsin. Follow the barrel lengths. Follow the shot type and size for all of the hunting you're doing. I'm just saying, when it comes to filling a tag, I believe you should make it as potentially ethically easy as you can for the hunter, because I think that's the way we get new hunters into the field, is to have them have successes. What's your how do you hunt them, Josh?
I've never personally reaped one. I agree. It does look like a rush. Typically, I'll, just as you do, put them to bed and then sleep about 4 hours and get back out. You know, I figure they start gobbling 45 minutes for daylight. And I always try to set up between where they're roosting and where they want to go. Sometimes I'll use decoys some size. I won't. It's all situational, but I prefer to try to call them in, because you're fooling Mother Nature. But at the end of the day, we've put stalks on birds and killed them, sure, too, if they're in the right location. As far as the arguing back and forth, it's kind of like the crossbow vertical debate back and forth. There's enough people trying to do away with hunting. I don't think we should argue amongst the troops.
We, look.
Everybody has their special way of doing everything.
That's
but
my thought.
What drives me, you hit on a major point that I want to talk about. We are absolutely, it is the most foolish thing and is the largest detriment to the hunting community, is the fights we have within the hunting community amongst each other, because the stick bow or the long bow hunters, oh, you shouldn't be able to use a compound bow. That's too advanced. The compound bow hunters say you shouldn't be able to use a crossbow. And the crossbow hunters are saying you shouldn't be able to use an air bow, or you shouldn't be able to use this caliber or that caliber. Stop fighting with ourselves and actually, because, you know, when the outside, when the non-hunters, when the haters look at it, they say, see, those people can't even agree. Clearly, they're wrong.
And that's what they want. They want
of
fighting
course.
Amongst the troops. So
yes.
It's the last thing we should be doing.
They love a disheveled camp, and that's what they do. And we're the most guilty. We do it to ourselves. We do it to ourselves. We fight amongst each other. And the bottom line is, you're never going to grow hunters in Wisconsin. You're never going to proliferate species of animals without hunters. You're never going to grow hunters unless you can, number one, get kids off the 3x7s and away from the computer and the TV and off the couch. And number two, you're never going to grow hunters if you can't not be at least a cohesive unit. And number three or four, whatever I'm on, you're never going to grow hunters if the hunting groups don't get together and go vote for people who support what they're doing in the outdoors. And that is one of the most lethargic, apathetic groups out there, is hunters. Danielle.
Oh, Joel. He was yelling directly at me.
Get thee to a voting booth. I'm going to take that as my personal responsibility to make sure you get to the voting booth every time now. But yeah,
I accept that.
How do you hunt them, Danielle?
Still trying to get it with my bow, but I always bring my shotgun just in case my Browning max us.
Have you ever gotten one with a bow?
I have not. The turkey cutouts on my target.
Well,
get them exactly where I need to.
Well, it's a lot different ball game when there's a turkey in front of you. I've harvested turkeys with a bow, but there's a part of me that believes that shotguns are for turkeys, because I've seen too many turkeys get stuck with an arrow that even looks like it's in a great spot.
And they just waddle away,
fly away, run away. How do you hunt them, Josh?
With a shotgun. I've always wanted to with the bow, but the thing of it is, to me, and this is just my two cents, if you're going to shoot them with the bow, you really got to head shoot them, you know, and that's all or nothing. You know what I mean? You know,
just guillotine them.
Yeah. But so I hunt them with a shotgun just because, I don't know, it's quick, it's clean, it's humane. And if I'm going to chase turkeys with a bow and arrow, try to shoot them in the head, I'm probably going to go with a lot of
years. If you're maneuvering around, if doing like a spot and stock.
Yeah.
And then, you cannot use a bow, in my opinion, because there's going to be so many different obstacles. You're not going to be set up properly. Like, if you're going to be staying in one put, try your bow.
Yeah.
Try your skills. But if not, then just definitely use your shotgun.
Yeah.
I like to hunt them. I like to set up and hunt them. I have reaped them before. I've run and gunned them. That's kind of where you're just creeping up on them and trying to get a shot. Mm. That's kind of like jump shooting to me. I like jump shooting ducks or geese. There's nothing better in the whole world than hearing them gobble, number one. Number two, not only hearing them gobble, but convincing them, fooling Mother Nature is the key to hunting in my, and that's probably why I'm not as much of a whitetail hunter as I am a duck and goose hunter. But the very best whitetail hunters, this is a perfect transition to Josh, the best whitetail hunters are those whitetail hunters who fool Mother Nature with the food plotting, with the calling, with the rattling. And they're convinced that they are calling in or they are creating such an enticing atmosphere for that whitetail to come in. They're convinced that they are fooling Mother Nature. I think maybe I don't have the patience for whitetail hunting. Josh, how did you get to be in a place that not only are you a successful whitetail hunter, but you thought this is something I can teach people, show people, and expand their knowledge in?
Well, yeah. Start me out. I can tell everybody and my friends laugh. I've shot my first deer ever November 5th, 1995 at 7:45 in the morning. Oh. I can go into all the details that most
people
get. So
you were late to hunting.
Yeah.
Like,
what's that?
So how old were you?
I was 12.
You were 12. Yep. Okay. You weren't late to hunting. I was late to hunting in 95. Hey, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with Josh Parent of Whitetail Design Build, Danielle Fairman. I'm Joel Clayfish. We'll be right back on Raised in Wisco. On Raised in Wisco, I'm your host, Joel Clayfish, alongside Danielle Fairman. Josh Hello. Parent is with us, and we're just going to get into talking about, we're in the thick of turkey season, so I got to talk a little bit about turkey season, obviously. But I really want to throw a shout out to the A-Team today, the A-Team Adventure Series. You took folks with diverse abilities out fishing at Milford Hills.
Aww.
Also, a huge shout out to Milford Hills. They are always there for us and always willing to let us come out and we caught fish after fish after fish after fish today. It was awesome. Giant bluegills. We caught some bass. I mean, just the guys just had a fantastic time. And it is heartwarming to see we have an organization that takes folks out into the outdoors who may not otherwise have a chance to do that. And that's what the Outdoors of Wisconsin's about. It really is about giving opportunities. And you as a hunter, angler, someone who uses the great outdoors of Wisconsin, it's part of your obligation to share that. So don't be afraid to get out into the waters and woods and drag people with you when you do it, because I promise you, even if you drag them the first time, they're going to be begging you to go back. So what? You have a story.
I just forgot that I did not tell you something.
Tell me.
I joined a bass fishing league.
You joined a bass fishing league?
I did. A catch and release league. There's like about 30 of us.
Was this with the Reaction Tackle guys? Did they talk you into this?
They did not. Remember my friend Jennifer Straw and Willow?
Yep, sure.
With them. It's in their league.
Awesome. Where is it?
Well, it's all over southeastern Wisconsin, but
so,
last weekend
but
was in
is it a
Michigan.
Different lake each time?
Yep, it
a
is.
A different body of water each
it is.
Time?
I'm very
and
excited.
What, so
I didn't tell
you
about that. I'm sorry.
Are you like a deep weed line fisher person, angler?
Shallow
are you
waters.
Shallow water with the Yamamoto Senko, kind of the wacky rig. Is that
wacky.
Your style?
It is.
A lot of people get into it. A lot of the folks, though, many of the people who end up winning these kind of tournaments are running deep weed lines with crankbaits.
Yep.
And that is just a style I've never gotten good at and I've never gotten used to, but that's where they catch some big fish, I guess.
I'm very excited. Okay, back to our whitetail.
I'm very excited to hear how you do, because I know you're good at noodling.
Yep.
It's virtually impossible to noodle a bass.
July 5th is the next noodling date. Yeah, so if anybody wants to come out,
I just want to tell you, if at some point you come back missing some fingers, don't be mad at me, because I think noodling is just absolutely insane to begin. Have you ever noodled, Josh?
No, it's that looks like more of a rush than reaping turkeys, and that's about as far as I think I'll go.
It's so exciting.
You could not pay me enough to stick my hand under rocks in the Mississippi River. Uh-uh. I mean,
let's do it. Let's go.
What if you stick your hand under a rock and there's a snapping turtle and he takes off three of your fingers?
What if it doesn't happen?
Yeah, see, I'm not that person. It's like, you'll never catch me bungee jumping, because it's
I've done bungee jumping and skydiving.
There's
and cliff
just
jumping.
Something to go wrong. I don't understand it.
Every single day that something can go wrong.
Can, but you're not inviting it. You don't step in front of a bus on purpose. You bungee jump on purpose.
You do bungee jump
Kelvin,
on purpose.
Kelvin, have you ever bungee jumped? Have you skydove? Is that the plural? Is that the past tense? Skydove? Have you, let's see. Would you do that bungee ride at the state fair? I think that's kind of like an introduction to it.
Yeah, you got bungees on both sides.
Yeah. I might do that. I'd consider it too, but still probably not.
Okay, but I want to direct us back to...
You don't have a death wish, do you?
No, I have a big smile and pitter-patter, let's get at her attitude.
I don't know what that means at all.
Let's get it done. Let's just go. Why? Why not?
Josh,
why not do it?
I know why not is because you could end up, you could wake up dead. That's why not. That's why Danielle's the perfect co-host for the show.
God hates a coward.
That is true. God hates a coward. That is a fact, and I will save.
He gave me a little extra spice, so I think I make up for some people.
You know what? I will save my. I'm not going to call it not Herosa. I will save my adventuresome side for, you know, mountain climbing in the cliffs of Spain, looking for a chamois, something that has an outcome other than just the
rush.
Falling, just the rush, the pure rush of it. Because I'll get the rush, and then you also get meat, and you've got hide and trophy. When you're done, you know, when
you go
when,
off for
when
tacos
you are
and
done,
tacos and
when you're done bungee jumping, all you got is a stain in your underpants to take home. That's
you
it.
Do not. You have a story,
that's all
a
you got.
Smile.
No, you better get out the Clorox, man, because that's about all I would leave bungee jumping with. Oh, gosh, this is degraded in a hurry.
Okay, I got a question about, I thought this question 2 weeks ago, and this is why I messaged you. Yeah. When we were out turkey hunting, all these trees kept falling over.
Yep.
And when I was with Josh Belsky, my boyfriend, not this Josh, he was talking about, oh, look, natural hinge cuts.
Sure.
I'm like, hinge cuts? What is a hinge cut? So we dove deep into it, and it was actually kind of perfect because last week you posted on your Facebook page, Whitetail Design Build, about hinge cutting.
Mm-hmm.
I have questions. Tell me the basic gist of it.
So the basic gist of hinge cutting, you really want to focus on them trees in the 4 to 8 inch category. You're making a flat cut throughout the tree, 60 to 70% of the way through, and the goal is to keep as much of the cambium layer of the tree intact. That's the lifeblood of the tree. The more you can get that intact, the gentler you can get the crown on the ground. Increases the chance of survival. And then what that does then is it creates something that I stress all the time, food that equals cover. Many times in the wintertime, you've seen a down tree, especially in northern regions, and the deer just flock to it because they're getting at that tender shoot, the tender browse that's on top of the tree. Well, these hinge cuts can stay alive for multiple years, if not 10, 15 years. And it's just, again, food that equals cover.
Even cut through 60% of the way?
Yep. Ideally, you're cutting them before spring green up, or once trees begin to go dormant again in mid-August. And then you're also, you're wanting to cut like March and April. When people are tapping for maples, that's a great time to hinge cut. The sap's flowing in the tree. There's a lot of flexibility there. And it's really a really easy way to make cover relatively quickly. And once again, it's that cover that equals food. you know, getting structure on the ground, no different than like, I don't do hardly any fishing, but you drop a Christmas tree in a pond yep. and then how the gills, you know, flock to it.
Sure.
It's the same principle with
deer. Like perfect cover. And,
if you want to find animals, out. Find cover, yep. period. Any species.
Yep.
Any species, find cover. And it's the only things that are kind of different than, are turkeys. Turkeys are a little bizarre because if it's raining, they can't hear the predators coming, and they'll stand in the middle of a field
yep.
so they can see all the way around them. And that brings me to a question. And the first question I have for you is, right now it's May, you know, it's the second week of May. Is now a time people should even care about deer hunting or deer plots or deer food or deer bedding? Is now a time that we care, or is it those who care about it now are going to see their results in the fall?
I mean, there's always work to be done. It really, I guess, depends on where you're at. Say a property's turnkey where you're just maintaining it. For example, I do a lot of no-till planting, so I'll be spraying food plots here in the next couple of days.
When you say spraying food plots, tell us what you mean to the average person who doesn't understand what that means.
Sure.
You're killing off the food plot.
Killing
correct?
Off everything that's there. So I'm spraying them this time of year with a combination of glyphosate, 2,4-D, I do all no-till planting, so that first spraying is critical, but I'm spraying the plots off in their entirety. And I'm doing it a couple times throughout the summer. So come fall, I don't have a whole lot of thatch to seed into. I have bare soil exposed. I'm always waiting till spring green up for that to arrive. I'm not killing them prior because, for one, the leftover winter rye grain in my food plots, for example, that's a critical food for them deer coming out of winter. It greens up good 3 weeks before anything else in the woods does. So it really kind of, you know, when a deer are at a stage where they're really vulnerable, it gives them some sort of food source, and then once green up arrives, the food plots, you can just see where they don't get hit as hard. There's plenty of other forage in the woods that I'm spraying off the food plots and killing them, kind of hitting the reset button to start over for this fall's planting.
What if somebody wants to set up? So your job, your career now, is essentially helping set people's properties up to kill big deer, or to at least grow big deer,
yep.
In the hopes of killing them. Of course, they're going to be able to kill food in the form of dope overpopulations and even in many cases, cull bucks.
Yep.
How much land do you have to start to have a program?
Once again, it's situational, but in extreme cases, I've seen 10-acre properties that have hunted far better than 80-acre properties. That's not the norm.
But, and you can even do it with 5 acres, right?
I mean, once again, you know, the more property you have, obviously the easier it becomes. You have a little bit more wiggle room in there. But I've had very successful clients with 10, 15, even 20 acres where, don't get me wrong, you're typically not holding mature bucks on them properties, but not always, but it's oftentimes.
But they're passing through.
But they're passing through. And if you have quality food, quality cover, and does that are better than the same locations every single day, when them bucks cruise through them locations during the rut, they're going to cruise through downwind of them spots where the does are. So it makes your sits and your hunting very methodical. It eliminates a lot of the guesswork.
So for properties that are butting up against another private property, but yep. this private property gets sold and it turns into like a community center or mm-hmm. a Starbucks or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so all this hundreds of acres of lands is just trees are gone, but that was the pathway for all the deer. So what is the property budding at? What are they supposed to do? Like, are they, how do they rearrange where the tree stands are? What are they supposed to start doing?
Well, I mean, if it's a five acre property, you're probably in trouble, you know, if you're really relying on the neighboring property. But it really depends on, I guess, the size of it, say, and where you're located. For example, I break property into three sections: big farmland regions, big woods environments, and more of a 50-50 type environment.
Yeah.
Now, say this happens, but you got 40 acres in southwestern Wisconsin. It's 35 acres of quality cover. You're going to hold deer on that property and probably several mature bucks on that property just because deer are compartmentalized and there's not a whole lot of cover available. Now, if that happens in northern Wisconsin where you have 40 acres, you know, probably less prevalent that they're going to build a Starbucks there, but it's when the deer have more area, they typically take it. So you're not going to pile as many deer onto that 40 acre property.
Yeah.
Just for a sheer numbers standpoint.
Yeah. I love my job, but I hate when we have to clear cut everything just to bring it in some another building.
Yep.
Like, oh no, it's absolutely heartbreaking. And then I think about the neighboring property. I was like, well, this dude probably has a tree stand right there.
Yep.
And now he has no more deer. Poor guy.
Yeah.
It's one of the tough things about living in Southeast Wisconsin. I mean, there, it's give and take and pro and con because we have some of the best whitetail hunting in the state. We have some of the best turkey and waterfowl. I mean, you've got the Oconomowoc area, which is on a main flyway, a main Mississippi flyway. I swear they watch Highway P and fly right down Highway P. Honest to God, sometimes I think they obey the traffic lights. I'm not even kidding. So when I saw, you know, when Piggly Wiggly was at the corner and the land across the street from Piggly Wiggly on Highway P and Z was a farm field. I mean, that was one of those spots that you could just literally set up any day of the week and you were going to get flyway birds and have a great shot. Well, now it's a subdivision and you can hunt like one little 15 square foot area in the far corner across from Proven Power, which makes it not even worth doing because if the wind's not right or the conditions aren't right and you're sitting there. And then the other thing is, as people move in, even if you're legally hunting, you want to be considerate of those people. And so they're going to call the cops. Then you got to talk to the cops and the cops will probably say, you're all right. So, you know, we lose fantastic areas all the time, which also is a reason that we have to make sure that when we're losing this property, we really maintain and are careful about exacerbating the richness of the areas that are left. Because in Wisconsin, we've got, you know, the Scuppernong area, which will never be developed. We've got other areas that will never be developed. One again, we're out of time in this segment. We'll be right back. But I have to tell you, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about combining different species and how to get them onto your property. And I'm going to use my property as an example for free on the radio. We'll be right back.
Standing there on that lawn, discount shades, store bought tan, flip flops and cut off jeans. Somewhere between that sitting on, I'm on fire and I'm on the run. You looked at me and I was done. We just didn't stop. I was singing to you, and you were singing to me. I was so alive, never had more free.
You're listening to the greatest outdoor radio show in the state, Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish, Danielle Fairman's alongside. No. Check us out on every civic media station throughout Wisconsin, 13 of them, every major market. You can listen to us Saturday mornings at 11 o'clock on your civic media station, your hotspot for all news, weather, sports, local, national, you name it. And we've got a barrage of fantastic shows on the civic media family. And we are blessed and loving the fact that we can join you, the citizens of the great state of Wisconsin, and talk about what draws us to the outdoors. Very often, the show's a cooking show because God knows food's my favorite dish. I grew up with a little Italian mother who's literally joining us in studio, first-generation American from Valenzano, Italy, who I watched and learned through osmosis. And I have to tell you, we had we were doing the – I got together with Jan Sather, who's been on this show before, Chef Jan.
Oh, yes, she's
and we
wonderful.
We had turkey five ways. Oh. The other day.
I'm jealous.
Danielle, it was so good.
I believe it. She's amazing.
It was fantastic. And we love to talk turkey and talk about food and culinary experience in Wisconsin. Don't forget, right now, you can go out and find morels. You've got ditch asparagus going like crazy. And the ramps are coming. Do you know what a ramp is?
I do not.
A ramp. Do you know what a ramp is, Josh?
Kind of wild onion, basically.
It's like a wild onion with like a garlic taste. Mm-hmm. And it is perfect as a seasoning to add, and then turkey season. So you can literally leave your house, come back with protein and several wild vegetables or fungi. Hey, you know what?
No, is this going to be a dad joke?
Do you know?
It's a fun guy because you're a fun guy.
Do you know what the mushroom said when they tried to kick him out of the party?
I'm a fun guy.
Come on, I'm a fun guy. I mean, it is a dad joke, but it's still funny. Every time it's funny.
It
I don't know
funny.
Why it's funny. So if you get out there in Wisconsin right now, and you don't even have to be a hunter or a meat eater, get out there and forage for some of the cool stuff and put it in your recipes. Use some real Wisconsin butter and cream and make it with your tofu if you must. I will say this, though. One of the things that I am enjoying seeing is that studies, research, and scientists and the medical professionals are saying that protein is literally one of the best things you can put in your body. Protein, protein, protein. My doctor says I should have 1 gram of protein for every 2 pounds I weigh. That means I should be eating 110 grams of protein a day, and I work on that. And somebody who is trying to develop protein for your backyard is Josh Parent, who's on the show with us from Whitetail Design Build, sets up habitats for folks who are trying to grow deer. Here's my question. I've got 50 acres. My brother-in-law is 50 acres. Combined, we've got 100 acres, 30 acres tillable, 30 acres marsh, and 30 acres hardwoods, and the rest is a smattering of combination of everything.
Okay.
How, and of course, we've only got, what, Calvin, about 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left.
Oh, man.
It goes so fast. I want to know how to set up a property that's going to yield deer and turkeys, because we're surrounded by public mm-hmm. and neighbors, and those turkeys can roost where they want, dump where they want, to eat what they want. Yep. But I'd love to draw them to our property. How do you do that? Do you get requests to combine species?
Sure.
And how do you do that? What's the best way to do that or prep for that?
Well, it's actually pretty easy, because the habitat that whitetails call home is home to turkeys, rabbits, pheasants, you name it. So basically looking at trying to create as much diversity on that property as possible. Diversity that'll hold animals during daylight hours. I'm talking grasses, weeds, briars, shrubs, hardwood regeneration, and conifer. So without, seeing the property, but just hearing about it, for example, hinge cutting red maple, for example, mm-hmm. dropping it into the marsh and letting that maple get in contact with marsh will cause more shoots and more regeneration. Dropping an occasional large maple in there to get some structure on the ground, and then coming in there and planting pockets of conifer. White pine, white spruce work really good in those applications, run at a ratio of about 100 per acre. And then all of a sudden you take that woodlot that I'm guessing is pretty open once leaf drop hits and, you can see a considerable distance. Now you cut down on visibility and sight lines and you make the property appear larger than what it is. But there's a balance. In farmland regions, a deer might not be concerned if you can only see 20, 30 yards. You get up in northern environments where there's wolves, that deer might want to see 60, 70 yards. So you always got to, what I tell people is when you find a bed, actually kneel down in the bed, wherever you're located, and see about how far that deer can see. And whatever that distance is, use that in the back of your mind as a guide as you're adding structure to your property. Because you don't want to make it too thick, especially in wolf country. You make it too thick and the deer will just avoid it.
Wow.
Never thought about that.
And that's why it's so awesome to have. That's why this show is the greatest outdoor show in the state, because we have experts on. And, mm-hmm. I consider myself a seasoned hunter. You're a seasoned hunter, Danielle. And we learn things like that every week. Because what I have learned about hunting and angling
is that I'm doing
and
it
using
wrong.
The outdoors. No, no. The more you learn, the more there is to learn.
Yep.
And what I'm learning here from Josh too is it's never too late to start.
No, never. No, I've been at it for doing this type of work for 20 years now, and 20 years from now, I'll be learning new things, or dealing with, you look at, whether it be oak wilt or you just look at CWD and, all the things that come into play when it comes to managing habitat and wildlife. What we have a handle on now, 20 years from now, it's going to be a totally different story. Mm-hmm. And you're basically chasing perfection. You're never going to quite make everything perfect, but you're going to continue trying and just keep chasing that carrot.
The goal is to continue to be as good as you can. One thing that you are unable to do is you are unable to listen to this show and tell people if I... You know what I hate? The saying I hate more than anything in the world, and my kids say it from time to time when someone says, I'm bored.
Oh.
If you live never in the state bored. Of Wisconsin, you should never be bored. Every moment of every season, there is something to hunt, fish, forage, kayak, climb.
Get out
explore.
There.
Explore.
Well, before we go, how do people get a hold of you?
So website should be out this summer, but for now you can email me at whitetaildesignbuild@gmail.com and very active on Facebook and Instagram.
Designbuild@gmail.com, Facebook, Instagram, Whitetail Design Build. Another awesome show on the greatest show, outdoor show in the state of Wisconsin. I don't want to offend our other civic media partners. We'll see you next week with Chad Belding and The Fowl Life on Raised in Wisco. See ya.
Bye. We'll